Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the FY23 High-Tech Annual Report Workgroup. I'm pleased to welcome our co-chairs, Madel Briggs-Melanson and Aaron Meary, along with workgroup members Eliel Oliveira, Hans Gutendijk, and we're expecting Hannah Galvin to be joining us today. Another workgroup member, Jim Georges, is traveling today, won't be able to join us. Public comments are welcomed, which could be typed in the Zoom chat or could be made verbally during the public comment period later in our meeting. I'd like to turn it over to Madel and Aaron for their opening remarks.
Thank you so much, Mike. Hi, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be back all together in order to start planning our annual report work meeting. And specifically, we want to really extend a warm welcome to our new report group members, both Hannah as well as Hans. We look forward to all of your insights, and we know that we're going to really receive a large amount of value from all of your different contributions. And this year, we're going to do things very much the same, but we have some new methods and a new perspectives of how we can actually help to support the construction of the annual report group as well. And so, Aaron, I'll turn it on over to you as well for any opening comments.
Yeah, appreciate it, Madel. Welcome, everybody. So another glorious year, another glorious report. We expect by the end of this all with good feedback and good input. As always, sort of a standing rule is that we are very, very keen on collecting and soliciting all feedback, making sure that every bit of feedback is heard, assessed, analyzed, even if it's not maybe relevant for this year's report put in a parking lot. So we'll be continuously referring back to that and ensuring that the entire full high-tech is heard, is respected, is considered, and incorporated in some which way or another, those comments and those feedback. So this group and the feedback of this group is critical in helping to shape that outcome and that dialogue and that discussion. I also expect a very robust discussion next week at the full high-tech meeting in DC, which excitingly will all be together. And we'll be able to start kicking this back off and getting folks thinking about it, especially for the new members that have joined. Last but not least, this report is critically important as part of our statute, as part of our reporting authority back to the Congress and, of course, the administration as to what we're working on, what we're considering, and more importantly, what's on the horizon that we need to be thinking about. I mean, it does shape policymakers' minds and help inform decisions' outcomes. So look forward to discussion and should be a great year, Madel. Turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Aaron. And so why don't we proceed on into all of our deck in front of us. So next slide. So first to go over today's agenda, we are going to move directly into the discussion of our work group plans. And as Aaron mentioned, there's clear charter that we have that we also have to uphold every single year when we're developing this annual report. And so we're going to go over some of the high level overview of that. Then we're going to dive into the discussion of potential topics for the high-tech annual report for fiscal year 23. There's so many different things that are occurring this year. And so we know that there's going to be very, very interesting and important topics for us to discuss and consider for incorporation into the annual report. And then before we end today, of course, we always allow time for the public to comment. So we welcome your thoughts. We welcome your feedback because this work group is also here for the public. Next slide. A little bit about our annual report work group membership and the ONC staff. Thank you so much, Mike, and which he went through all of our various different members and including our two new members that are joining us, but then also our ONC staff who supports us every single time that the committee meets, but also when we're away from our standard meetings and you have them listed here. So we want to always thank our ONC staff for all of their support of the annual report work group. Next slide. All right, Aaron, I'll turn it on over to you to dive into discussion of the work group plans.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and get next slide. All right, so this is our kind of our calendar of events here. Hard to believe we're already staring at 2024. Time is flying on by. So obviously, we got this month's report and then report out at high-tech July, and of course, the rest is scheduled throughout the year. We always try to wrap up right about Christmas time-ish, New Year's-ish. And report back to the high tech for approval somewhere in that January, February timeframe permitting. And of course, transmittal sometime in the springtime there, February, March. Again, all things considered, it will be a busy year, lots of topics, lots of things going on. And it's exciting, right? With the new HTI 1 rules and everything else that are coming out, how that will shape into feedback of this report will be critical. So next slide. As I mentioned, we'll be reporting out to the full committee how things go along. You'll see Madel and I press the committee as the spring comes on into fall time and the summertime, the other order around, fall and next spring for feedback and making sure that we get feedback from the high tech. I ask all the members of this committee to please encourage your colleagues to speak up and say something. It's amazing how we get a plethora of comments at the 11th hour, and we want to have all the time in the world to consider those feedbacks and do the research appropriately. The ONC team and Excel team do an amazing job of going deep on each topic. So if there's a high tech member with a pressing item top of mind, it's critical we engage with them. Next slide. All right. So the work plan is as such, right? We're going to develop a potential topic list and focus on that and present it to high tech in our June meeting. That's today's discussion. We'll talk about a crosswalk document, which is what's developed over the summertime. We presented a high tech in September. Then a work group continues to develop the crosswalk document during the fall and presents those updates to high tech. As referenced, the crosswalk is those topic areas as it aligns to security, interoperability, and all the topic areas and all the topics beneath that, right, that we want to investigate. The work group will review the final draft report in November and December and present to high tech in January for approval. The high tech votes sometime about February timeframe for approval. And of course, onward it goes to the HHS secretary and to the Congress, as well as posting onto healthit.gov in March 24. Also, for those of you in the provider space, I encourage you use the high tech annual report with your boards of directors. I do it all the time to keep the board up to date on what's coming down the pipe. There's so much noise out there, but the high tech annual report's a great way to sort the noise from the hype and the reality of what's happening on the ground. Next slide. All right. Discussion of potential topics, the high tech annual report. Next slide. All right. So I think we need to go to the draft list here. And really the question, we're going to go through this list now together as a team. The question will be, you know, are there questions or comments about the draft list? You know, are there other items that we're missing? And then your feedback and comments, right? So this is going to take a little bit of time. But again, a lot of these come from items that stem from last year, items we have heard recently, and then, of course, items that are top of mind. This is not exhaustive. This is just a starting point, and it will be refined over time. So if you don't see a topic on here immediately jumping out to you, say something. We'll add it to here. But we also want to give time to the ONC team and Excel to do the research on it and figure out what the meat on the bone is. All right.
And before we go on, Aaron, just to add another piece, and especially for awareness of the work group, during one of our pre-meetings, one thing that we discussed is how we can continue to optimize this annual report, not only for education, but also for impact. And so as we're thinking about the potential topics for consideration, we really also want you all to think of what are the areas that we as high tech should be reporting out on in order to continue to raise the awareness of our country, but also to help to guide on really what's forthcoming? Because we have not only right now here within the work group, but of course with the full high tech, we have so many experts in so many different domains, and our voice and our perspective is incredibly important in not only helping to support ONC, but also helping to support all of the rest of the various different agencies and stakeholders throughout not only our federal agencies, but also throughout the country, because so many of us use this report even back locally in our home institutions. So while we want to reflect the thoughts and the great work that the full high tech is doing, we also want to think progressively of making sure that we're thinking what's coming down the road and how can we ensure that we use this report in order to help to prepare all of our various different organizations in the country on what really needs to be considered when it comes to health information technology. So just wanted to frame that. And that was kind of one of the things I was mentioning of a little bit of a tweak of how we're going to be putting together this annual report for this year.
Well said, Madel. Well said. Ditto. All I can say is ditto on that.
So these are, as Aaron mentioned, some of the initial topics that have come from the full high tech that are listed, but we really want to open it up to the work group to see which additional topics that we should include. And maybe what I'll do, Aaron, I can run through this slide, and I know that there's another slide that has even more areas for consideration. So for the very first one, for protection of sensitive health data, this was suggested both by Devin McGraw as well as Hannah Galvin. and is really underneath the target area of privacy and security. And the issue that came up that we should really consider is that there should be increased discussion of sharing and segmentation of sensitive data, including a focus on the implications of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization on the cross-border sharing of pregnancy-related data. And I would probably say reproductive health in general and the potential harm to patients and providers. And this has really come across because of not only this court case, but when thinking about all the various different implications of interoperability and data sharing with reproductive health. The second topic, and then we'll open it up for discussion, safety and impact of mobile health apps. And this was suggested by LEL. So thank you for this. And just really discussing and diving deeper into the federal government and how the federal government could potentially identify an existing framework to create a new one to review the safety of mobile health apps, including vetting and certifying that those health apps in order to ensure they are clinically valid and safe. And we did have some robust discussions during last year's annual report work group to speak about exactly this. And this has been something that has been on the forefront in terms of the thoughts for both HITACH and ONC, and especially how ONC can partner with other agencies such as the FDA, who's also very deep into this work. And then the last area, bias concerns. So algorithms, clinical decision support tools. We know that this is a huge area of discussion, especially with HTI-1 right now, and really looking at our DSIs, our decision support interventions. And the description of this topic that was brought up by Stephen Lane was lowered barriers for access to the use of artificial intelligence-driven predictive models in healthcare may require increased federal guardrails. And I think we can all think about how we can expand this when we're thinking about data concerns within our DSIs in order to ensure that we're also mitigating any forms of bias, racism, discrimination, but we're also making sure that it's fully accessible to everyone, not just based off of geography, but also based off of ability status, as well as the various different forms of organization. So a lot can be done there. So we want to pause and open it up to the work group in order to see if there's any thoughts about these three and any additional items that we need to add. Hans, we see your hand.
Yes, Manel, thank you. I have a couple of thoughts on particularly the first and the third that I'm not sure whether that means additional topics or not. When, for example, looking at protection of sensitive health data, there are a couple of different dimensions to this. One is that there are privacy rules, policies established by jurisdictions that may conflict or that needs to be sorted out as data is moving around or depending on where the patient is with respect to those jurisdictions, of which this is one example where that comes into play. So the question is that do we want to specifically look at this example, or do we also want to look at the larger challenge of how do we, what kind of guidance or suggestions or work should we address to manage generally privacy rules, variations across jurisdiction? Because that in a number of different areas, that is a challenge on how to do that. How should we interpret it? What data do we need to figure out what data we can share or not share? And then we have a couple of examples like this one to add. So that it's a matter of, and a similar kind of question with the bias concerns, algorithms, et cetera. We have the general challenges with AI and natural language with machine learning, et cetera, where there is the transparency concerns around that, the impacts of which this is one of those as well, where that's a great example of on how to address that part. So it's a question of how do we generalize some aspects and how do we specialize in the specific examples? How do we want to reflect that in an annual report?
Go ahead, Aaron, and then I'll jump in.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. So Hans, I think there are a lot of dimensions here that need to be addressed. I think, so the specific request that came back, right, that we noted was around women's health and sensitive data to that effect, and those kinds of componentry, I think you bring a larger question up to bear. It could be two parts to the issue, right? What's the more grander issue? And then it's sort of a subset, because I want to be respectful of this piece, right? And we can double click this with Hannah as to walk through the dimensions of it. But I think it's a great point, right? Look at it broad. I will say though, the report work group has been keen on making sure we don't bite off more than we can chew, and making sure that we do break this into pieces that are manageable, that do answer the larger question, or attempt to answer the larger question rather. So I think it's a great point, Hans, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Madel, if you want to add to it.
No, that's what I was going to mention as well. And I would love to hear Anna's piece, but just, you know, this is one of the things that we're also thinking about for the annual report is how can we make sure that this report is really hitting on key, relevant, and impactful topics of the current ecosystem, but then also what's to come. And we know that this is a great concern, especially around reproductive health throughout our entire country right now, because it does have such significant implications on the delivery of healthcare and the overall justice principles as well. And so that's I think, you know, why I also agree that this is very important for us to weigh in on some of those recommendations. And I totally agree with you about the broad piece of privacy, but I also think that this is something that is highly relevant and contemporary that we really do need to address in detail. And Hannah, this is your recommendation, so I'd love to hear from that as well.
Thanks, Madel. I didn't want to jump over Eliel, though, who had his hand raised before me. So yes. Should I let Eliel go first and then I'll comment? Thanks.
Thanks, Hannah. Hi, Eliel. Eliel,
I'm driving.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Eliel. You have the floor.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And I think it's a bit complementary to what Hans was talking about. So before he started, I was already going to suggest something along the lines of privacy across different data sources. And I think from my perspective, it's related to, the concept of health data utility that continues to get traction nationally. And as it relates to social determinants of health data, where now, in my case here, and I'm sure many of you are hearing, where we are trying to now combine data from, let's say, incarceration and education sources and so on and so forth. And OCR has, you know, provided some advice and even some guidance direction on a few of those use cases, but it's still a very raw place for us to define what situations and a decision can be made about data sharing or not. So I think it's, again, a bit what Hans was saying, but maybe with that flavor of SDOH, given the fact even that it's part of the US CDI now, and you know, I think we maybe wanted to think about the policies around and enforcement of data sharing along SDOH. And so that's just to reinforce, but I think another topic that I wanted to suggest, and that's going to come up from the task force we have right now on HDI anyways, but it's the need to for standards and pilots to the management of patients' choices or consent for the use of their data. I think we, ONC, has provided some support to test a couple of things there, but the more we think about it, we see how complex it is, and there's likely a need for prioritization on what we do first, because it can get very granular. But I think if we haven't talked about that yet, there is likely a good, important topic that to address in terms of patient consent and patient decisions on how to use their data.
Yeah, we have historically, Eliel, talked about granular choice, especially, and this goes back even to the blue button topics in the prior Health Policy Committee and Standards Committee all the way through, that Dr. DeSalvo was really kicking off with Lucia Savage back in the day. Like, I go way back, right? So now I'm putting my original hat on from way back in the day. So we've been talking about granular consent for some time. So I think it's a great point maybe for the ONC team to see, is there a way to tie together some of the work that was done in those Tiger teams back in the day all the way through as we carry forward? And as that now applies here when it comes to the public domain. So I think it's a great point, Eliel, looking at the aggregate even, you know, jail health and everything else, all the way down to the synthesis of this specificity. So good points, Madel.
Yeah, and I agree as well. And Eliel and Hans, you both bring in really important pieces. And what I was thinking about from hearing both of your comments, I absolutely do think that it is, we may have a larger topic and maybe we have subtopics underneath this. And which, because we do have so much additional sensitive data that we're bringing into systems, and we know that that could be very beneficial, but if it's not used appropriately, and if it's not done with consent and transparency, to your point, Elia, we know that it can cause harm, and it can also cause a disruption of trust between those that are generating the data and those that are collecting and potentially using the data. So I think both of you all bring in a really good point about recommendations of how to protect and appropriately utilize sensitive data. And then, of course, partnering it exactly as you mentioned, Aaron, I would love to hear a little bit more about how we've done that before, but really looking at that consent and that transparency back to the patients themselves who are generating this data, and the data belongs to them anyway. So I think that those are all really good points.
Great points. No, great. Well said. Hannah, you've been so patient.
Thanks. Well, you all have made such excellent points, and I really agree with them all. I'm going to try to kind of go back a little bit to Hans's point. First of all, let me say at a high level, I think that some of these suggestions were made perhaps before the HTI 1 NPRM came out as well, both number one and number three. Actually, I don't know about number three, but I'm sort of making an assumption there. And so I think in our thinking about the potential topics for consideration, we may just want to take into account that there is now a proposed rule that is addressing some pieces of these that may not have been considered when the recommendations were made here. In terms of the protection of sensitive health data, to Hans's point, there are so many pieces to this. There is a policy and sort of legal piece and this question of sort of harmonization of state law. And one of my questions would be, do we make recommendations to other federal agencies, since ONC would not be over that piece? Although I do remember that I believe Dr. DeSalvo at some point was starting to sort of spearhead a group around harmonization of state laws as well, right? So this may be the place to start to recommend an interdepartmental and interorganizational group around some of that work. To Eliel's remarks, first around consent, consent management and granular consent has to interplay with granular segmentation, right? You need the ability to granularly segment the data. You need a semantic conceptual model to define what do we mean by sensitive data. And then you need a granular consent piece to drive a patient's preferences around what data they will share or not share and with whom. And that applies to sharing data in the sort of treatment, the TPO kind of space, as well as thinking about data for research or interaction with third-party apps, AI, machine learning, sort of down the road as well. And so, you know, I think that's a key part of this. And there has been, there are some groups, Stewards of Change Institute has brought together groups to talk about this. And there are certainly groups that are putting together granular consent tools, and ONC has done a lot of the earlier work on this, and it would be great to kind of pull that up for background.
Yeah.
And then finally, my last comment is around the focus on women's health. And again, I think this was made prior to the HHS OCR notice of proposed rulemaking as well, specifically related to Dobbs and concern around reproductive health. There certainly is a concern around reproductive health in light of the Dobbs decision and prior to that. There are a number of state laws that protect reproductive health specifically for adolescents. And so that's a sort of a legislative lever for some of this work as well. As Eliel brought up, social determinants are another use case, and SHIFT, task force that I lead, has been working with the Gravity Project around a social determinants use case for granular segmentation. We also have an adult behavioral health use case that we actually think is a little bit simpler to start with than either a reproductive health use case or a social determinants use case. The reason being is the lack of harmonization around state laws. And so those are our three use cases. And then there's a sort of a final use case around shared data in the chart that impacts reproductive health and also just in general, a sort of longitudinal medical records, also social determinants health, of health in a shared record as well. So I think there are a number of sort of vetted high priority clinical use cases that could be considered here.
Great points, Anna. Great points. Appreciate that. Madel, anyone want to add that?
No, that was wonderful, and appreciate all of the expanse of clinical case models. And we need to consider that and what are some of our priorities in this space that we may want to pick out and highlight within the annual report. So we'll be able to dive into it. Eliel, we see your hand, and then we do want to get through some of the other topics in order to comment as well. Like, we're already on the first topic, which already shows we're going to have a great, great year thinking of all the topics to include. Eliel,
yes.
I know you're driving.
Thank you, Mandel.
Yes,
just a quick point there on the consent, and I know we're going to dive into that later, but, and Aaron had some great points there about how this has been around and about granularity and all that, and I think, like, one thing that for this group to discuss here is almost like a strategic plan for consent, in my view, where we have talked about this for a while. I think we know the importance, but there isn't anything feasible, technically implemented, and if we have a pathway to decide, like Hannah was saying, on the SDOH side, but also on consent, to identify what are some key use cases that we can address and create that structure to know the patient's decisions and wishes, and then grow from that, something that can scale for everything else. I just wanted to talk that there to the group to consider as we talk about that, but that's it. Not another topic.
That's a good point. Hannah, I do want to answer real quick. You did ask about referring to other agencies. We have done that historically. We've invited listening sessions, and we've invited sort of joint collaborative discussions. And so that is something we've done with previous report work groups, and of course, the full HITAC. It does require some discussion, but this is Aaron's words, the air traffic control component of the ONC. They do a great job of pulling the right people together to have those talks. And we've had the OCR come talk to us before and others, and they do a great job of it. So I think that is something we can definitely recommend to have them help us with. So just, I wanted to answer that because you asked the question.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. All right, Adele, if you're good with this, go to the next subject maybe, next topic. All right.
Yeah, safety and impact of mobile apps. And Eliel, this was one of the topics that we ended up tabling from last year to this year. And once again, looking at federal government and thinking about the frameworks in order to assess the safety of our mobile apps, and also in partnership with some of the other agencies. So we just wanted to open this up to the work group in order to see, is this still a topic that we want to consider for incorporation in our annual report this year? And are there any other, if so, are there any other expansions that we want to make sure to add on to it as well? Any thoughts?
It's quiet.
I know.
Everybody got all their comments out with the first one.
I mean, I think this is very important, right? And I think this is very important. I think that we should consider all of the potential topics that come up here and then prioritize them. But I think this certainly is a very important topic, and others have been, providing guidance on this as well.
It's almost like we need to version of the safer guides for
exactly
health insurance, right? That's where my mind goes. Like, we need some sort of guardrails like that. So
to think about, right? And I think there are certain other sites, like I think the AMA has provided some guidance to their providers, for instance, on how to recommend a safe mobile health app, right? And so I think there's a lot of work being done like nationally in this space, and how do we pull some of that together and really some very specific guidelines, I think would be very helpful.
Good point.
And we will definitely prioritize all the topics prior to the final draft of the report. So we will definitely do that too, Hannah. Eliel?
Thanks, Mandel. And I was waiting for a little bit before making any comments to hear if anybody was going to say this needs to go. But since it seems like we are on board here that this is an important topic, I wanted to add extension to it, which is related to digital divide. And what I mean by that is that in one of the work that we did here from the medical school with the support from ONC and our LEAP project in 2019-2020, it was a lot about the Cures Act and patient access to their health data and be able to share with others. And what we learned through that process is that underserved communities really do not have a lot of the capabilities to access their data and to be able to do something with that. So I think as we're talking about these mobile apps and this ecosystem, that we also want to think a bit about what would be an ecosystem that would work here for underserved populations, because the incentives in the marketplace, apps that generate some financial benefit, and that not necessarily is the fact that what's going to solve challenges for underserved populations. So I'll be happy to share with the group that the White House Office of Technology explaining a little bit about that point specifically in an RFI that they had last year. But I think something important to also consider that the most in need are not necessarily going to have access to those tools as they become available.
Yeah, and Eliel, I 100% agree with you. And I would actually add an additional aspect on top of that in terms of inclusivity and design of the mobile apps. And when I say inclusivity, not only just talking about language concordance and really building that into the apps, but also adjusting and thinking of ability status. We know accessibility in general. So outside of even just some of the digital divide pieces of it, there's also the accessibility, even in terms of ability status of individuals. So there's language accessibility in general, but then there's also, of course, thinking about how we design these apps in order to ensure that we're centering those that we're serving with those apps. And so I think that while there has been a lot in the space about, and especially I think the FDA, of the safety, but we also have to think about the safety and utility so that we do not worsen some of the inequities that we currently have, because these apps are working for one group of patients or people, but not working for the many others of people. So I do agree with that. And I think that we can bring these together and put an even greater spin on it, which kind of complements some of the work that's actually going on nationwide. Hans did have his hand up, but then I think it went down.
It did go down because I was going to go to potentially other areas, so I was going to wait for that.
Oh, okay. Very good. Hannah?
Well, I also was going to go to other areas if that was okay, but I can wait till after Hans if that. And so maybe I can just bring up here, you know, one of the barriers related to the digital divide, and one of the reasons for the digital divide, right, is lack of adequate access to broadband internet by many populations still in this country. And I wonder if that is a separate potential topic for consideration, sort of under our equity by design goal, right, and target area. And right, there are many cities, communities in this country that still can't access broadband internet, where much of the population can't still access broadband internet, which has significant limitations on quality of care, health status, and ability to utilize any of these technologies. So I'd like to propose that as another potential topic.
Yeah, and that's, you'll see in the next set of slides, Hannah, we actually do have a piece of that for the landscape, because to your point about, you know, the digital divide, there's the broadband, but there's also even accessibility of Wi-Fi, but then there's also even the digital divide with digital literacy. There's so many aspects of the digital divide. And yes, how do we start either one, building out the infrastructure for broadband, but most importantly, we do know everybody has phones. That is something that we do know across our country as well as globally, that digital tools exist, but there's aspects of these digital tools such as broadband, which may be more variable, especially in our most under-resourced communities. But we're still in a digital first type of country and world where people still have phones, but they're using mobile and not using broadband. And so how do we change the way we're developing our health information technology structure so we're not basing our innovations and our apps and our portals on broadband, but we're actually using more 5G and we're using more of our mobile of capabilities. And so yes, that is definitely within the landscape that we're going to get to next, and all very important points.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. And just one additional point I'll make to that is that many individuals who are using their phone and their cell service for data may have limited cell service plans and need to be very, very careful about their data usage, which limits their access in that regard as well.
100%. And so there's a grade in every way.
Yeah. Great.
So Hans, should we go back to you for the next topic?
If that's okay, the main comment that I was going to make is that I was looking through the HTI comments, and a number of those would be a good topic for the annual report work group. Is that going to be one of the things that ONC staff is going to go through and then start to add them to the list, and then we can run through it, or is there another step that we would want to go through to review them before that happens? I think there's about a handful, five or six or so, that sit across the different tabs where the work group was called out.
So that is something that was brought up as well. And what our ONC staff is going to do is take a look at all the different recommendations from the HTI task force in order to try to propose some of those that may be very applicable to the annual report. So yes, they are going to help us sort through that, because there's so much great information that's coming out of the HTI task force right now in terms of the work. So yes. And so hopefully we can bring those back, and then we can also put them into our prioritization matrix in order to see which ones we want to for sure include. But I think we all have a feeling that HTI is going to be at some of the ideas from the HTI task force and this work, all of our recommendations will be very front and center in the annual report this year.
Yeah, it will be a good source for inspiration.
Yes.
Yeah, and the ONC team did message us, Hans, after our last meeting. They're collecting all that, and they're working through that, right? Just a few hours ago, so we're giving them a hot minute to sort through the ideas and the comments, but they're definitely on top of it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right, should we go to the last one then? Bias concerns, algorithms, clinical decision support tools. This is directly also related to HTI-1 and the DSIs and some of the conversations that we've had. But any thoughts about this as a topic, or how we should potentially roll it into some of the other topics?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, please, Hans, you had to. Sorry, was it Hans who was going?
Another second. It was either way, so that's fine. I think this is a good topic in context of today's questions about how to apply AI, what the concerns are, but also generally analytics research. What's good use of the data? What's not so good use of the data? As well as to what extent can source systems that provide that content Are there opportunities to improve on the quality of the data that can help and ensure that better analytics can be done? And the challenges in that space. Frequently, we see is that data can be collected, but it isn't collected, or it is collected, but not quite at the level of granularity or quality that is needed to have a worthwhile outcome or analysis that that is informative. So I think it is an up and down the chain challenge on how are the different pieces put together. So the outcome is a reliable, transparent, actionable, and applicable. So I think that that's the larger challenge. That again, how do we weave that into it to look along that that chain? And particular examples are going to be very helpful to step through that and understand that. Having then an overall perspective on how it should fit together is then critical as well, to make sure that whatever that specific topic was is not going to lead to an implementation by HIT that it works for that, but is stuck for other things that have similar concerns. That's where you will see frequently my comments be coming from. Do we have an approach that fits together, that the variety of concerns can be addressed, not the only specific one that has been discussed on its own?
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Hans. Hannah, and then Aaron, I know you were coming on and off, so I saw your hand too. Hannah.
Thanks. So yeah, so I agree. This is really important. I am interested to see the comments we're going to talk about, I think tomorrow, maybe Thursday, that will be coming from the subgroups for the HTI group around this. I think there's some good literature out there from AMIA and others who have some guidelines and recommendations around this. And so I do think this is a useful topic for consideration. I think I'm still kind of getting the hang of the reporting work group and how much we are taking from what some of the other groups did and how much work this group is doing de novo to understand. But I think that there will be a lot of, I expect there to be a lot of good recommendations that are coming out of the group discussion later this week. Mm-hmm. To start from this, yeah. Mm-hmm. But perhaps you can guide, your thoughts.
You're spot on, Hannah. You're spot on. You're exactly right. And a lot of these topics, so we do try not to recreate the wheel, and we try to lean hard into what the other subgroup committees are talking about. And then even when something comes up out of the blue, like a COVID-19, knock on wood, you know, we try to adjust appropriately to match the relevancy and currency of what's happening. So I think it's a great point. And that is one of the magic things that ONC does, is they know how to somehow translate all that work into some concise, really easy to follow report. And so that's Michelle and team that do that work. So I'm sure they will rise and shine again, as they've done every year, but it's good points.
And Hannah, one other last piece to that is that, again, the point of the annual report is to highlight the great work, the recommendations, and the thought leadership of HITACH. And so that's why those trends and those themes come directly into the annual report, and based off of what HITACH feels are some of the most important items to put forward to the rest of the landscape. So that's really what our charge is to really identify those topics that we know have great significance, great potential impact, and that we want to communicate out to all.
Thanks for that context.
Aaron, you were going to say something as well before.
I was going to just really sort of, you know, illuminate that, you know, we've been talking about a lot of bias and algorithms for at least, I know, for the fact past three work groups. So there's some good data and some good items that were done research prior that we can build upon as well, Hannah, besides the HTI one and other stuff that are going on. You're exactly right. So I think as we pull this forward, what I love about HITACH and the annual reports, we talked about this when we said the very first HITACH, was that it kind of shows how forward thinking this HITACH is. And we were anticipating a lot of these challenges like this or DigiCeuticals or other items years ago, right? As was the Policy Committee and Standards Committee and the Tiger Teams way back in the day, right? But now as it begins to come to fruition, everybody's like, oh my goodness, AI, AI bias. It's like, we've been talking about this for years. Like, we know there's a problem, right? We got to address this. So I think it's a great point for us to pull forward. And another topic I've always brought up too is make sure that the committees of the past, that work doesn't just sit on a shelf, right? That we brush that up, we pull that forward because those are brilliant people. And let's bring those ideas forward and say, is the time now right to do some of the things that, you know, even before Dr. DeSalvo, they were talking about, right? Is now the time that we can do those kinds of things? So it's a great point. And this ONC team does a good job of pulling those things off the shelf per se and saying, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? So if you know, Hannah, of other items, some of the previous, like the, I'm thinking of the cybersecurity Tiger team, right? Back in the day, or the API task force, or the Argonaut project stuff that we did back in the day, all those nuggets feed into these columns. Let's pull those forward as reminders for the ONC. They love that. Cool. All right, next page. All right, it's some good ones here. All right, improving health IT infrastructure for health equity and social determinants of health data. I will start. Since it's a TBD, I will start summarizing this and we can all dive into this, right? So I think we've alluded to it today, and this is really for Michelle and team as they're taking notes, I know copiously behind the scenes, regarding that equitable, you know, ability to capture those social determinants about us that make up the total comprehensive landscape of patient errand or the patients that we serve, from food deserts to patient-reported outcomes to all the pieces that, you know, we've talked about at USCDI. They may not be, you know, defined variables yet in data fields, but they are on the roadmap. And all those pieces that make up truly who we are in a very equitable way, and more importantly, for the ability for folks, no matter regardless of social economic status, where they come from, gender, all the pieces, to be able to report in and have access to that data. So that's a very 100,000 foot view of what this is with social determinants data. But I look to this committee to opine and add, please pile onto that.
Yeah, and if I may jump in and start to add some additional pieces, in addition to what you said, Aaron, which was so important, we cannot achieve health equity and justice without ensuring that we are supporting all of the various other socially based infrastructures that we need in order to drive health equity and justice. And what I mean by that is that while we're thinking about the health IT infrastructure to look at health equity and social drivers, one of the things that we also, I would love for us to start thinking of is how do we continue to support our community-based organizations that are oftentimes responsible for helping to address those social needs on both an individual as well as on a population level? And how does that, again, we've talked about the closed loop referrals before, but how do we continue to support that workforce and that health IT infrastructures and oftentimes those much smaller organizations? But then it also goes back directly to public health, which is the next one. But again, this is all related because in order to drive and improve health equity, we also have to think about supporting and having those interoperable structures with our public health entities as well. And then also across the entire continuum of provider care. And so all of those pieces, I think, are very important. And the only last piece I would add that I really would love for our annual report to focus in on, and this is something that we're doing with HTI and many others, is that we need to continue to incorporate the voice of our patients and their caregivers, meaning their families, their loved ones. And so part of improving also our health IT infrastructure for this domain should also thinking about the data interoperability that are being generated by our patients and ensuring that they're also very accessible to it in order to ensure that they have full visibility, transparency, and can also make decisions in their overall health and health outcomes. So those are just a few more elements I would add on to the landscape of this first section in general. Eliel, we see your hand too.
Yeah, I'll add a couple of thoughts here, Mandel and Aaron. One is on the infrastructure side, right? So we all know about the EHRs and the certification programs and you know, how we guarantee that data, you know, can be exchanged and all that. But now we're talking about a completely different world of organizations that are using disparate systems that have to communicate with EHR or clinical providers to then highlight what's taking place, you know, with those referrals. And I think that that might be an area of landscape analysis to see what systems do they use, even if there is a system, like some of these CBOs are pretty small, right? And if there isn't a system, what do we do about it? Because again, we need that visibility to understand what's going on and with those referrals. And you know, that this is me talking a little bit about my presentation that I'll have next week at our face-to-face meeting, but that's one aspect, is that infrastructure that somehow needs to exist there to be able to then now allow for this communication, the interoperability. And the second aspect of this, and again, you're going to see my presentation next week too, is the harmonization of data. We have, you know, the US CDI, and you all know about the standards that came out of the Gravity Project. But through our work here, we are finding that data harmonization for assessments of needs is going to become a big problem down the road if we don't address early on. And I compare usually to labs. Because as you all know, if you have a large health system that does their labs in-house, they can call the labs anything they want, use whatever metric. And when we try to do that, use that for research or other purposes or COVID warning systems, surveillance, then you can't harmonize that unless if you have some big pockets to do that manually. Maybe trying to prevent what happened to labs with needs assessments, even though there are some standards there, small organizations are coming up with whatever they need to get the answers that they need. And trying to force them to use a standard format might be a tough thing because they have already integrated that in their workflows. Anyways, a lot to say there, but those two things are to me important in terms of doing that landscape analysis of what we do about those two aspects.
Fantastic. Absolutely. We look forward to your presentation next week as well. Thank you for the preview. Hannah?
Yeah, I agree with Eliel. I think that the sort of baseline concern here is how are CBOs and other sort of pieces of the healthcare system collecting structured data. They have not been incentivized to implement certified electronic health record technology in the way that many providers and healthcare organizations have. And I think it doesn't just apply to social determinants data or health risk assessment needs data, but as we consider things like privacy and consent is above, right, we run into these barriers with really sort of large swaths of the system where a lot of patients get significant services and the exchange of data, not to mention sort of school health systems, school nurses, right? There are sort of large pieces of the system that have been left out of meaningful use and have not been incentivized to implement certified technology or structured data. And so I would say I would be in favor of using potentially social determinants data as an initial use case, but it's really the infrastructure across sort of the sort of non-traditional provider organization support structures to be able to support the continuum of care.
Yes, there's so many incredibly important topics there, Hannah, and especially now that, and this goes to your comment and Eliel's, now that we now have regulatory requirements even for screening for social drivers of health, without having, again, that infrastructure and helping our community-based organizations, are we going to almost topple them? And in addition, is it a disservice to our patient population? So these are all the things that we absolutely need to think of, as well as that data infrastructure to actually do this work appropriately to really drive the overall health and healthcare outcomes and social outcomes that we all hope that this drives. So all fantastic points. Anything else that we should add to this piece? And Hans, you're saying adding a social driver of health analysis. And you notice I'm using the term social drivers. I'm just saying that to the ONC team. There's a reason for the term drivers versus determinants. And that would be a strong recommendation that we change some of the language to drivers versus determinants because of the how dynamic these items are versus determinants, which tend to be more fixed and almost not mutable. So a lot of us use the term drivers in because it's dynamic, you can modify them, you can change them, versus determinants, which seem fatalistic and fixed. So just a recommendation there for us to change that. But any other recommendations for this very first one?
The suggestion I made that perhaps in applicable target areas that there might be a public health component to that as well.
Absolutely.
As a main requester of such data, increasingly to get a full complement of data to understand context.
Correct. Love that. So Aaron, and also for the work group, I have to transition because there is a data equity symposium that I'm also taking part in right now. So I'm going to transition it into the wonderful, highly capable hands of Aaron, and we'll see you all in DC next week as well. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Adele. Have a good one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Let's truck on through, team. So next one we're going to do is ELR, ECR, and syndromic surveillance around optimizing public health exchange and infrastructure. I will say that the previous annual reports work groups have had robust discussion around this, and Mr. Stephen Lane did a great job of organizing these topics, especially in 2020 and 21, the height of COVID. So we've learned a lot since then, so I look forward to taking this to the next level, but look forward to your feedback, your comments here around how do we do this in a robust way from what we have learned? Hans, you're up first.
Yes, I think this is a great topic as all of the other ones, where over time we are learning more and trying to figure out what else we need to do. And there's still a lot to be done there. And from that perspective, I think we includes is a good starting word there, because it is not only ELR or ECR and syndromic surveillance, there's the immunizations, there's the vital statistics. So I think, and it is also the feedback loop. We provide data to public health, but what does public health provide back to provide improved context? Helios has at this point in time, one of their tracks, Align and Optimize, which includes these three, but other ones as well, to figure out how can those data flows be enhanced. Is everybody able to share? Are we sharing the right data through the right channel? So I think it's a good topic, but I would not limit it to ELR, ECR, syndromic surveillance. They are a good example in some areas. I certainly have brought up in the past the question of, from an EHRA perspective, EHR perspective, that these data flows seemingly are overlapping and not optimized for what needs to occur. At the same point in time, there are variances that we need to acknowledge and understand that it still needs to address individually as well. We haven't figured it out yet, and I think it's a great topic to dive deeper and see what else or what do we still need to do to enhance on that, because we're not there.
Good points. What else, team? Okay, any other feedback on this? I think Hans had a good point.
I think there's just a thought here. I completely agree how important it is. This is, it's especially like what we have with COVID, right? So I'd love to pose the question as we discuss this going forward is like, are we ready now for another pandemic? And the surveillance systems being in place. So I guess keeping that question in our heads may help us see how can we bridge an additional gap so that we don't find ourselves. And I mean, it doesn't need to be a global issue. I think we have disasters going on, emergencies going on all over the place. And the solution to some of these surveillance systems could be quite helpful in so many situations. So.
Mm-hmm. Maybe international, right? International support and how we do this syndromic surveillance on an international scale is what we've learned. Data sharing internationally, right? With a lot of the pandemic happenings and learnings about, you know, how we actually do contact tracing and things like that. What did we learn there? A lot of pieces there. Hannah, hand raised.
Yeah, I think that, right? I mean, one of the sort of newer technologies that has come up during the pandemic is wastewater data, right? And how do we incorporate that into public health data? As opposed to sort of just some of our previous means for surveillance. So I think incorporating that would be important.
Great. That's a great point. And I would say all biomarker data, right? That's a big scrutiny point right now is what to do with biomarker data. I know here in Florida, there was even a bill considered to really banish that. And that was paused, thankfully, because just a fear of the unknown of what could happen, which is a fair and valid concern. So how do we regulate that, right? Hence wastewater, hence other things. So great, great points. Okay. So obviously something to double click and dig into that one. Next one, supporting interoperability standards priority uses. Now, this is one that's been there for quite some time since I think the dawn of the annual report work group. And we continue to learn more about interop standards. I do note that this has been a standing agenda item. So HTI1 and others will obviously contribute to this as well as recent efforts with the US CDI task force and others. But I welcome, are there specific topics we should double click on when it comes to interoperability? I think LEL speaks to some of the stuff you were talking about earlier around SDOH and sort of systems talking to each other and what the new world looks like. But I think we should really talk about what's the forward edge here. And Hans, of course, Hans has his hands raised on this one, his favorite topic. Hans is yours. If you're muted, you may be muted.
Sorry. No, I appreciate that. And sometimes interoperability comes to the top of my list. But I wanted to build actually on the comment that Eliel made around SDOH, and it comes back in general here. We talk a lot about we can share data, we can solve a particular operational need. From a workflow perspective, we'll get quick access. But the quality of the data, the consistency, the completeness of the data that is needed in order to take to create value out of that continuously as the data moves around, that still is a very hard topic. Are we all using the same vocabularies? Perhaps, but I'm using it slightly different than somebody else's, and therefore it still becomes incomparable or hard to compare. So what are some of those things? Is the things there that interoperability is not only a technical issue, but it's a practice issue. It is an understanding of what data do is important, not only to me, but what's important to others to reuse secondary data use of that data with the least amount of burden by the source that it's natural to do. And to me, that needs to be part of interoperability as well. We are sharing lots and lots of data, increasingly more. What we also see is that we are sharing so much that easily we are putting Oracle head on. We are seeing that that our clients are frequently getting 80, 90, 95% of the data back that they already had. How do you filter that out? It's not an interoperability technical component, but it's data quality and content. How can we right size? How can we do that? So to me, somewhere we need to start to figure out how can we enhance on that? So we have right size data, right data, comparable data, complete data. And we always know it's not going to be 100%. People will not answer certain questions, period. That will happen. But what can we do there? And that might be an interesting topic to look at and what can we suggest on where to focus? How can we advance that? Now we have the pipelines open.
Good points. Great points, Hans. Other topics? Eliel.
Yeah, I'll add one thought here, Aaron. Given this under landscape analysis, maybe the possibility of us kind of walking towards maybe selecting a couple of important interoperability use cases, right? Priority use cases. And I think the one that comes to mind here that I love mentioning to folks is like the fact that, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, if you go to a pharmacy, you have a prescription, you need to bring that little piece of paper and somebody's going to take it and tell you to come back. But suddenly, you don't need to do that anymore. The doctor basically asks you, okay, what is your pharmacy of preference? And, oh, that in the corner, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's going to be there. And then you're driving home and they text you like, well, it's ready to go. You can come pick it up. I mean, it's one use case, right? Very complex, of course, to get all these EHRs and pharmacies to get that done. But I just feel like looking at this as being a topic that has been around, as you said, Aaron, if we just pick one or two like major, you know, but which ones are those? I think that maybe the landscape analysis could help us define which ones could we attack, you know, and focus on. So that's my thought here. That's maybe a way to evolve this.
No, a good point. Landscape analysis always doesn't hurt. I do know that we have some work done there too. So maybe truing up our existing landscape analysis of what that looks like. And also what's emerging, right? I know there's a bunch of interoperability standards work that's going on at other agencies, CMS and others come to mind. So, you know, what can we true up there as well as we look at things? And I recall, I want to say it was like 2019 or 2018, Dr. Rucker leading some efforts around prior auth with CMS. And that began a conversation about data exchange and data flow and what do we do there? So there's been a lot of work done over the years. So, you know, those pieces. Other comments, other thoughts? Hannah, thoughts from you?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything new to contribute here. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, no problem. All right, last but not least on this list, increasing access and accessibility of telehealth services. Again, another one that's been on our list for a hot minute, but it's still very, very important, especially if we talk about the domains of equity and others. Hannah Reyes, go for it.
Yeah. So I think with the end of the PHE, right, there is a legal piece to this and understanding, right, the various sort of state, what CMS is going to cover from an insurance perspective and what states are then going to support and what state Medicaid programs may cover. So I guess it's not as much a legal piece, but a sort of a payer piece, right, that drives the accessibility of telehealth services. And so I think that understanding that and whether or not a floor could be put in place, I think there's been some proposed sort of a floor already around what should or should not be covered, could be a piece to this. Then the broadband access, sort of as we talked about before, I mean, there are many pieces to digital literacy that are part of the digital divide, digital literacy, broadband access to devices here. And so I think, you know, I would think about us looking at both of those angles. This is very much a moving picture and a moving target right now. As we understand the various requirements in the wake of the end of the PHE. I think there's a lot of good and meaty discussion here.
Good points. Eliel, thoughts?
Yeah, so what I was gonna add here, and based on the previous discussion that we had about equity and, you know, individuals having mobile apps access and all that, I think related a little bit is, you know, we now have quite a bit of resource to expand on telehealth in rural areas and, you know, and so on and so forth. But I don't think what I have seen is support for individuals that are underserved, that are already in high need to actually get that data access in their mobile devices. So I'm saying this out of our experience here, where we are trying to do certain things with mobile apps with patients in real settings, and they're still saying to us, well, this is great, I'd love to participate in this project, but then I can't use the app because when I get a few extra minutes of credits, I need to call my doctor, I need to call my mom, and then I run out of credits again. So I think we still have something that to fix in terms of telehealth specifically, but more in terms of access to just the cell service, I think, to individuals. I think we cover the organizations under the telehealth funding that's out there, but not underserved populations.
Yeah, agreed. Very good points. Hannah.
And just to add to that, right, there is an FTC program that will, that sponsors access to broadband, if not the cell service. But I believe you have to have a social security number to apply to that. The application is a little bit complicated. And for those who may not speak English as their primary language, maybe difficult to fill that out. So I think that's potentially working with the FTC as another agency to understand how to make that more accessible might be one area. The other thing I'd just like to point out is that but I think another thing that I'd like to point out is the barriers for those who don't speak English as a primary language. A lot of these apps, the mobile telehealth app. Even if you're speaking to a provider who may speak your language or get an interpreter on the line who speaks your language, the app itself is in English. And so navigating that app, maybe there may be barriers there for people who don't speak English as their primary language. And so while there are these many other barriers in some communities, there is a real barrier around actual English literacy as well as digital literacy.
Great points, as well as ADA compliance and everything else. Great points.
Right, exactly. Yeah, 100% ADA compliance.
Great points. I think that is very, very topical. Other pieces, other feedback here, other comments. Okay. So as you see, we're right running close to time here. It's been a nice, robust discussion. We just started. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have one other question here. Yeah. Most of the time we are talking with telehealth about inside the US. And there is some amount of, perhaps not a large amount, but of cross-border. And what are the implications there? What would we have to look at to address some of the challenges there? Not sure whether it's sufficiently large enough of an issue, but I do know an example that I think in your state, a law was recently passed on where data should reside.
Yes.
And how does that relate to telehealth or patient moving around outside the country where data is being accessed or not? Does that encompass that or not? So I think there are some general questions starting to increasingly pop up, or as you travel to Europe and I'm available, I'm accessing from there while I'm out there back to my provider here. Mm-hmm. So it's a small area, but is that something to consider here as well?
Absolutely right. And all the complications of GDPR and other pieces, right? As it feeds into that big tangled web of stuff.
Yep.
So great points. All right. Other feedback, other questions from the team, other items? All right. Well, Mike, I know we're running close here. Do we feel comfortable opening up for public comment?
Sure. Happy to do so. We're going to open up our call for any public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. Let's pause this for one moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. Not seeing any hands raised, Aaron, so I'll turn it back to you to close us out.
Perfect, thank you. Well, I appreciate that, I think, yeah.
I'm sorry, Aaron, we do have a hand raised.
Oh, perfect, well. Perfect.
Yeah, Linda Humler. Linda, you'll have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We can. Thank you.
Amazing. Hi. Thanks so much. I'm glad I get to be the one public comment today. Woohoo. Yeah, this is an interesting call to listen to. I'm a PhD student researching interoperability, and I just wanted to hear what y'all are working on with this project. I just wanted to emphasize, you know, I heard a couple themes across some of the topics y'all raised that I wanted to bring together, just in terms of, you know, I think there was something discussed earlier about support for the community-based organizations, you know, that are behind SDOH, behind some of that data that we're trying to connect to the main kind of healthcare pipelines we've already built, and kind of this theme of just ensuring there's actually enough funding and support for those organizations to even do this day-to-day kind of data work that's required. And I think it kind of connects also to the theme we're hearing across the industry right now about, you know, provider burnout, lack of kind of support for just the people doing care work on an everyday basis. And I'd be curious if y'all are thinking a little bit about the kind of human infrastructure in terms of data work. Maybe a theme now that it feels like some of these, you know, basic data infrastructures are kind of really in place. Some of the technical standards are in place. You know, what attention might be paid to some of the kind of human infrastructure, the data workers, you know, both providers, nurses, community-based organizations, places like that. Yeah, I think that's my only comment. And thanks again.
Great feedback, Linda. Thank you so much for that. I will say, Linda, that there's some great grants from the ONC related to worker upskilling. They put their money where their mouth is, which I really appreciate the administration's plural. They've been doing that even previous administration, always funding the next generation of students. So I'll put a plug in for the ONC. They got some great grants to upskill, but there's a lot of work to be done still, I think, to your point. So great comments there. All right. Any help? Anybody else, Mike?
No, I'm not seeing anyone else, Aaron.
Okay. All right. So just a couple of quick administrative things, and then we'll wrap this party up. We have obviously an annual report work group meeting shortly thereafter, the high tech next week. Be there or be square, so we can all discuss and really get this going. The Excel team and ONC team will take this topic list crosswalk and begin to put it together into something to synthesize. But the in-person meetings are always fun because we can brainstorm and whiteboard together really quickly and ideate on the fly. So that'll be next week after our high tech meeting, and be a good discussion there too. So I'll open it. Any last follow-up questions for you guys or comments? Hans, hand the rights, go for it, sir.
You indicated that after the high tech meeting, there's going to be next week more time on it. Just checking my calendar. And I'm not sure whether there is, oh, there it is. So that is the additional half an hour after. Yep. Okay. I want to make sure that I'm not
crossing. You're invited to the party, Hans. You're there. We expect you at the party, my friend. We're ordering just for you.
Yeah, I'll make sure that my train doesn't leave too early.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay.
Awesome. All right, guys. Then that's all. I'll close this meeting out. Thank you very much for the great discussion today. I will see you next week, and I look forward to it. Travel safely.
Thanks, everybody.